Greetings. Welcome to the Dividing Line, a special Dividing Line on a Friday. We are joined today. It's sort of a, what do they call this? A mashup? Is that what you call it? Crossover, whatever it is when you put everybody together. I am joined by the trio, the guys that are so famous or infamous or something, depending on how you want to look at it. There they are, the guys at Cross Politic. They cannot see me, so I can make faces at them. I can do all sorts of things I want to do. I can hold up signs that they can't see, you know, whatever. But they have been kind enough to join with us here, and we've got some stuff to talk about, and a lot of people are all excited about this on the internet. The one thing I need to tell them that we're going to disappoint them about immediately is we're not actually, though the word got out, we're not actually having a baptism debate. So I just want people to understand that. I mean, that word got to you guys too, that we're not doing that part, right?
Wait, what?
Oh, I'm done.
We're leaving. We're done. I thought that was what we were here for. I thought we were bringing you.
Okay. All right. See.
Hey,
don't tell me that, because Chocolate Knox didn't even know we were doing this half an hour ago. So.
Baptize the kids if you have children.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
You did too, and you know it. All right. Look. Hey. Okay. Let's get into this, because all right, what happened was I was over in London, and you guys did a program where you interviewed Matt Walsh, because I think, was it because of the exchange he had with Cy Ten Bruggenkate? Is that what sort of got that going, or what?
It was actually before that.
It was before that.
Yeah, there's Matt had been going back and forth on with a number of different people, and then Cy jumped in, and then we
contacted. Right.
So there's a thread, a number of different threads that Matt was on, and I just saw some of his kind of apologetics, and I was like, oh my gosh, we got to get him on. And then Cy hopped on that thread also.
Matt was specifically saying that in arguing about abortion, he didn't find it helpful to use the Bible.
Yeah. To just jump right in with the Bible.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know exactly what had prompted it, but I so honestly, I listened to the whole thing while doing crunches. Now that might impact how you interpret things or something like that. But so if you can imagine some old guy in a hotel in London, near the Thames River, doing crunches, listening to Cross Politic, that's what was going on. So when I got done, I was sort of like, I don't know how to react to that, because I mean, most of it was Chocolate Knox and him doing the role playing type thing. Okay. And I listened to it again this morning. I'm sorry.
You didn't like my role play. Is that what you're saying?
No, you did the role playing at first. And he's trying to do his thing, and then you reversed it. Then he turned it around, reversed it. And it was just so clear to me that there was a big old gap between the two of you. So let's start with this question. And this was the first thing someone tweeted to me the day that it aired that somebody had caught. And that is, at the beginning of the program, you referred to him as Brother Matt Walsh. Now, was that just sort of a... you know, sometimes you just call people brother, or was there a theological content to the statement?
Yes, definitely theological. I think I was the one that said
you
that?
You were the one
was,
that said it. Yeah. And I ain't gonna lie, it made my hair kind of pull up on the back of my neck.
But even though you don't have any hair.
Right. That's the crazy part about it. Right. I don't have no hair back there.
Okay. It was still perked up.
So, okay. I knew that every Baptist in the world was going to grab it and be like, what the heck just happened here? Yeah. Can you say heck on this show?
Well, okay. So, but it does speak to the issue, because throughout the entire discussion, you all are talking about the gospel, bringing the gospel to bear in the role play. Chocolate Knox, you're talking about trying to bring them to the gospel. Everybody, whenever any of you got to say anything, because Matt Walsh does he's a radio guy, so he knows how to talk over everybody like we all do if we want to. But when you got a chance to speak, you're talking about, hey, we want this to be about the gospel. This is the power of God into salvation. This is how you change people's hearts. And Matt's not going there for love nor money.
Right.
And the reason is he doesn't have the same gospel you do.
Right. And that's kind of what I felt like at the moment I wanted to push and see. Okay, so I'm kind of pressing in that soft area. So, Dr. White, you've known me. I've grown up in my business in this industry around Todd Friel, right? So I've been around many witness encounters and shot them, edited them, the whole nine, and had a lot of great back conversations and learned a lot from the means of Todd and Ray Comfort. And so for me, you know, not really knowing where Matt was, I know what he professes. And I wanted to push as hard as I could to see if he would be ashamed of it. And the harder I pushed, the more I thought it became clear to those listening that Matt wasn't really ready to commit to that in any way.
Well, and that's so what you said at the end. You said at the end of the program, you said, you know, I get the feeling he's you know, a little bit ashamed of the gospel.
Right, yeah.
But
right.
But see, my problem is I'm not sure how much you follow his stuff. But Matt...
I got six kids. Not a whole lot.
That doesn't mean anything. You might be able to, with six kids, you might have learned to multitask. You never know.
My baptized kids, man.
We can barely keep on your show, man.
But, go ahead. But the point is, he detests the sovereignty of God, election, everything that is definitional that we would share. He detests those things. He is a conservative, believing Roman Catholic, mass, transubstantiation, purgatory, natural theology, the whole nine yards. And the disconnect I felt at the end of listening to the interview the first time and then again this morning was the issue for him is that y'all kept talking about the gospel, but there was never a definition of what it actually is, other than you guys are going, hey, this gospel changes hearts. This is how you can change the heart of the person who wants to kill his baby and stuff like that. He doesn't have a transformational gospel.
But didn't you actually explain the gospel when you were doing the role play?
Absolutely.
I mean, you did.
I defined it.
You did explain it.
But then he said, yeah, I agree with all that. Well, the fact of the matter is, he doesn't agree with all that if he's going to Mass on Sunday and he believes Christ is being represented in a propitiatory sacrifice. And if he believes that the entire semi-Pelagian, sacramentally based system of works salvation and priestly absolution, that's not a transformational gospel. That's why he can't possibly agree with you, because as he said, I've never seen it work. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I get that same answer from evangelicals too. So.
Oh yeah. Well, you're right.
You know, so actually, I would love to have more of that conversation with Matt. The point I was going after with Matt wasn't necessarily that one at the outset. I really wanted him. For me, I was working my way there, and boy, we could have had another hour like the dividing line would do. We probably would finally get there where we were at. I really just wanted to make it clear there's only one option. If you're not going to buy into that option, I don't care if you're Catholic. I don't care if you claim evangelicalism. I don't care if you don't baptize babies or do. Nothing works. Yeah. You don't have an answer. So right. I just put him in a category. I swept him in that same category I would have swept anybody in, regardless if they would claim to be a Catholic or a Christian, because they're denying the obvious transforming work of the gospel, even if they might profess it, right, or claim it in one way that you would be comfortable with, right?
But this is one of the main issues that we're dealing with, though, in the quote-unquote, abortion has become absolutely front and center in our society in a way that in my entire life I've never seen.
Praise God.
It's there. But that has also exposed differences in what would be broadly called the pro-life movement, too.
Sure.
And especially at this point, I love hearing people saying that we need to bring the gospel to bear, that this is the only way to transform hearts. But there's only one gospel that does that.
Amen.
And so I would imagine that we agree that the gospel that Matt Walsh professes to believe is not the gospel that's going to change someone's heart. Am I correct on that?
Right, but would we also agree that someone could believe in something that's not right and still be Christian?
Right. But where do we... Okay, flesh that out for me. How does that relate to Matt Walsh? Because, I mean, Matt's not just He's not just believing something that's wrong. That's wrong. I mean, you know, you guys are wrong about baptism, and I think you're my brothers. So that's not the issue. The issue is there is a line. Obviously, I don't believe that the baptism issue is that line by any stretch of the imagination. That's why I can preach in Presbyterian churches. And when I did the debate with Bill Shishko, he had me preach in the OPC church the night before on justification. Sure. This was a great way of demonstrating, hey, this is something that we're addressing as brothers. But
could I be a member at your church?
Could you be a member at Apologia? You'll have to ask Jeff that question next week on the air.
You're an elder.
Oh wow!
I'll let him do that in the studio next week.
He
says yes. I've already talked about that. But the question was for James, not for Bible.
But you'd have to agree with me that in Galatians chapter 2, when Paul addresses the pseudadelphoi that are troubling the church in Galatia, that they were in the church. They looked like us, they talked like us, they dressed like us, yet he called them pseudadelphoi, false brethren, and said we didn't put up with them for even an hour so the truth of the gospel might remain with you. So there is a line that has to be drawn.
Absolutely.
And would you agree with me that if the Judaizers cross that line in Galatia, when you look at what Rome teaches, we can start with the Mass, we can go to the Pope, we can go from there to Purgatory, that they've gone so far beyond the Judaizers that it's not even funny. Would we agree on that?
I think the issue is, I agree on paper, I would totally agree on paper, that the Council of Trent, you know,
oh, man.
Is that people that...
We're getting
can you hear us?
We're getting the max headroom thing going on, unfortunately. I don't know if it's a solar flare or just what.
But hello,
I can hear you now.
Are we caught back up?
How's this? Are you hearing me?
I'm hearing you.
Okay. Toby, start over. I was just going to say, I think we completely agree with you on
paper.
So what the Roman Catholic Church teaches dogma-wise, what the Council of Trent formally stated and so on, I mean, the Council of Trent anathemized the gospel. Mm. And so they went, you know, on record as saying that, you know, formally they're a false church. So we agree, I think, completely there. I think the issue, though, is one of where are individual people?
Right.
So John Calvin recognized that even though the Roman Catholic Church had formally become an antichrist, had become a false church, there were many true Christians in that false church. And so there were still even true churches within the Roman Catholic communion. And I think it's the same thing all the way down to the present day where
not all of Israel are of Israel.
Yeah. And even Paul, for his harsh words in Galatians about the false brothers who are Judaizers, I can't remember which letter it is, but in another letter, he actually commends the work of a disciple who was of the circumcision party. And so even Paul, though he condemns formally those people who hold that doctrine, could still work side by side with those who in some fashion were still associated with Judaizers. I've had this experience, many people have, I think, who you meet people who are Roman Catholics, and as you talk to them, you find out, like, I'm pretty sure you're a believer. I believe, like, you believe in Jesus, and you've got some weird stuff on the side here.
What's wrong with you?
And they're wrong, and they need to be corrected. And I would urge them, come out, get out, find a Bible believing church. But I'm convinced that there are many true believers still within the Roman Catholic fold.
So was that basically the attitude you have toward Matt Walsh?
Well, yeah, I would add to that. Part of the brother comment there is we also I'm taking Matt's faith at face value. Faith at face value, and so I haven't really seen any, let's say, actions that might make me think that he's not a believer, despite his views of the gospel and his adherence to Council of Trent.
I would want an opportunity to take you know, Chalk presents the gospel to him, and Matt, you know, as you said, sort of said, yeah, but then didn't think it was effective. I mean, if we had him here in the studio, we have an afternoon with him.
Drill down.
I want to push that, and I want to push the conflict that you rightly are recognizing, that that the formal doctrine, dogma of Roman Catholicism flies right in the face of the free grace of the gospel.
Yeah.
I would want to press that. I think in the 20-minute midweek fix that we had for us, the main point was just to try to
the presupposition.
There's more. We've talked and we're made a friend there.
Unfortunately,
so we have more opportunities to push him.
Okay, I got the last part of hopefully have some opportunities to push him, but we did some more of the Max Headroom thing. I'm not sure if you guys are old enough to remember Max Headroom. Actually,
oh yeah, the Coke guy.
I don't remember, but it was the internet up there in internet's sort of a new thing up there in Idaho, isn't it?
Idaho. hey now.
I mean, you know, Pony Express, stuff like that. You know, we understand you're doing the best you can. So when you say you don't see anything in Matt Walsh that would cause you to not think that he is a brother, dogmatically defending Roman Catholic theology of the Mass and salvation doesn't get included in that?
But I think that I would like to have the conversation more with him the same way that Ali Stuckley really drilled down on his conversation with hell. So I was able to catch not the whole thing of that because I got six kids, remember? But I was able to catch
a
little
baptized?
Clip. They are baptized.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Go baptize your kids if you have children.
I keep hitting that stupid button.
Yeah.
But so I would love to drill down more on that. I think if we actually had a chance to drill down a little more outside of that conversation,
we would want to chase the very point you're making.
Come on, Doc. You know we would go down that and eat that alive.
So,
you know that.
So then the difference between us basically is I'm going to start with the assumption that and maybe you haven't seen him addressing these issues the way I have.
That's absolutely the difference, I think.
That's my deal, James. I honestly have talked to him two times, and I think I've listened to him once, and that's what I know. So I know he's a professing Roman Catholic. I know he's conservative. I know he's pro-life. That's really all I know.
Okay. Yeah, well, since I have tried to engage him, he ignores me. But since I've tried to engage him, and I have watched him just mock the concept of election and issues like that. I mean, I'm starting with the assumption that he is a knowledgeable professing Roman Catholic. And therefore, my first idea is this is someone I need to be evangelizing. I cannot assume that we both possess the life transforming message of the gospel. Because I don't view Rome's teaching, whether you're talking about the old Tridentine form or even the new hippie cool Frankie version, which no one knows what it means anyways, neither one of them are actually transformational. And so I'm going to start with the need to deal with that with him. And what you're saying is without that knowledge of his background, that's not where you're going to start. You're going to start with sort of a hopeful assumption. And
well,
then
I've met so many Roman Catholics, I guess, in my experience, and maybe these are just exceptional things, but I've met so many where I'll point out some of the differences and they'll claim I believe the gospel, and I'm sort of confused by that. But I also think, well, the church is a messy place.
And my great example of this, I did, and he's good friends with somebody who we know, Doc, Alan Keyes.
Right.
And Alan Keyes to me blows my mind because here is a Catholic, and at that time I hadn't met too many, a few, but you hear Alan Keyes talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you sit there and say, this man is schizophrenic or something. I don't understand how these two worlds live together in the same way. And
oh, I know. I sat at dinner with him in November of 2017, I think, and everyone else at the table just sort of ended up wandering away because we were in a deep conversation about the Marian dogmas of the Roman Catholic Church. It took about three sentences till we were into it. That's just how fast it happened. And he may call himself Orthodox, but you and I both know from a Roman Catholic perspective, he's way too independently minded to actually be Orthodox as far as Roman Catholic.
He was the first one I met like that years ago, and I think it was 2007, I think that was. And then after that, I started meeting. Now, there's a weird branch of Catholics, too, which is the charismatic Catholic people.
Right.
Now, those are the ones that act like evangelicals, and they use all the altar stuff at the altar, and they burn that stuff at the Catholic Church, but yet they still want to be a part of the Catholic Church. And so it's messy for me, too, in that sense. I know these guys. I don't know why they're still there. I think they have some bad understanding of what the church is. Ecclesiology is an issue for a lot of these guys.
Right.
But I'm careful. I treat Catholics almost like I treat charismatic. I need to know you, talk to you, understand what you mean by stuff before I start casting down judgment. Now, listen, Doc, if you and me want to get together and start a Presbyterian council to start calling these guys out, I'm with that.
Well, it just for me, given the close look, here's what I see coming. I see global Christianity moving south as the center of things right now. We see a lot of growth in South America, in Africa. There's a lot of problems in Africa, but anyway, I see the kingdom growing and expanding around the world, and yet I also see Western culture under a tremendous amount of judgment. I can't imagine how else anyone can describe a culture that can start injecting hormones into 8-year-old boys to turn them into little girls. Anything like that. I mean, if that doesn't fulfill, if you don't love the truth, you'll be caused to love a lie. I don't know what does. So the point is, in the future, unless the Lord has something really change, we are going to be pushed into a smaller and smaller portion of.
Oh, we lost you there. There we go.
Lost me. We're going to be pushed into a much smaller and smaller portion of the culture. And that means we have to know, because we're going to be pushed tighter and tighter together with Roman Catholics. We have to think through these issues extremely carefully. And especially in the broad pro-life movement, quote unquote, however you want to define that. We are forced to work with one another and to communicate with one another. And as a result, the questions are going to be coming. I'm seeing a lot of evangelicals who have adopted the perspective that says, you know what, let's not worry about that gospel stuff. Trinity, deity of Christ, crucifixion, resurrection, that's good enough. That's the basic Christianity model. And there's too many questions about the gospel. Let's leave it off to the side. That has already taken over, I think, a large portion of what used to be called evangelicalism.
Presbyteries are a good way to handle a lot of those definitions. I think
the distinction I would want to make is between allies and co-belligerents.
And
so I think we can have co-belligerents who are not with us in the gospel, but who want to fight transgender mutilation and the butchering of babies, who aren't allies, because we know that the central power to accomplish, to defend life and to redeem life, is the gospel.
Right.
And you know, so, the thing that scares me the most aren't the Catholics in this situation. It's always the true, it's us. It's evangelicals I'm more concerned about in a lot of ways, because that's where the ball's really been dropped at. And a lot of ways, Catholics have been doing things to our shame. And holding the line in a lot of areas where, if we were there, they wouldn't even be in this conversation right now. There shouldn't be a need for a Matt Walsh.
Yeah, that's to our shame.
That's to our shame.
I can think of some areas, but I can also recognize that the current trajectory of the leadership of the Roman Church is away from that. I mean, if you've read in the what is it, in the Closet of the Vatican that just came out a few months ago, the Lavender Mafia, the clear documentation of the large proportion of homosexuals in the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church.
Surprise!
And that obviously is resulting in, you know, when the Pope can sit on his plane and say, homosexuals, who am I to judge? And the rest of the rest of the world goes, what? Something's going on there that I'm not sure what that's going to end up, you know, resulting in. But it just, I want, before we move on, I just want to make sure, because the discussion was about, we all agree that what needs to be brought to bear is the transforming power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is the only power that's been given to us. It is the only power, that there's no power on earth that can possibly resist this. And my concern was someone listening to that might not recognize that there were two understandings of the gospel.
But and they that, only heard one, Doc.
He doesn't. Yeah, you'll notice that. The reason that he said that doesn't work, or I've not seen that, you know, that pragmatic thing, is the man-centered gospel that he has doesn't change hearts and minds. He's exactly right.
They only heard one gospel, and that whatever that they, however they might think of it, I believe the supernatural power of hearing that alone is enough to transform their heart.
Yes, but let's just did Matt hear that? That would be another question. You wanted, I know you want to have more time with him. I get that. I understand that.
But Doc, you know this too. Sometimes when you're talking to the person, you're really talking to the audience. So Matt was just there a lot of times to be there in one sense that we're having the conversation, but there's a point, and you know this from open air preaching, where it might be the guy three rows down from
course.
Where you know what I mean? And so sometimes you have the conversation with the person that's there,
right.
But man, you're trying to hit the whole audience and you say, which dog is going to yell the loudest, you know? And so that's what you're doing in the situation sometimes. And so, and you know this from hosting the show, it's not always about what's in front of you. It's what's behind and where you're trying to, you know, who else you're trying to hit in that conversation.
Oh yeah. I hear it. And that's why when I got done with it, I was like, let's talk about that. But somehow that wasn't one of the 20 questions that I got a couple weeks ago.
We did that on purpose.
Because if you listen to Cross Politic anyway, you shouldn't even be listening to it. I don't even know what you're doing.
That got ducked for some reason. So if you got a chance to have Matt Walsh on again, what would you do? What would you say to him?
My first question is, what does he make of Jesus Christ?
Okay.
Just start at the beginning.
I would just start at the beginning. Who is Jesus? What do you make of him?
Okay.
Yeah. You know, that's probably where I want to start at. If that was a...
It simplifies a lot.
I would want to define the conversation we want to be in. Because remember, I think Matt was supposed to come out here at one time. You know.
Yeah. We've invited him out. And we want to have that conversation with him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we haven't had an opportunity. But I think that's a great answer, Chuck. I would say, so who is Jesus? And, you know, explain to us, you know, what your understanding of his work is.
Yeah.
And then you start there. And then I think from there, I would want to start chasing him into some of these, the typical Roman Catholic corners.
Sure this up. How do you hold these two things together?
Yeah. How do you hold this together?
Especially the anthropology, because that was what was behind so much of his answers. It didn't come out, but that's what was behind so much of his answers, is he's assuming that natural law arguments, apart from a transformed heart, can change hearts. And that's where the real issue lies.
And he's denying the Great Commission,
He thinks there's a neutral ground that everyone can agree.
Exactly. Exactly.
Have a conversation.
Yeah. No, that's true. And we would... If we get him here in the studio one of these days,
and have an hour with him,
we'll get him in the corner. We'll corner him.
we'll make you proud that time. How about that?
Well, it just especially with what we've got coming, I really, really, I certainly have emphasized on my program a number of times the necessity to really think through what we're going to be facing. It used to be a few years down the road. I don't know that it's a few years down the road. I really wonder about our ability to do what you do, to do what we do with the Dividing Line, what you do with your program. in as little as 2021 to 2025. I really do question whether we're going to have the freedom to do this type of thing in the future, at least in this culture. And
well, I'll just add that, of course, I mean, the ultimate concern of everything that we're trying to do is about the gospel, you know, cross politics. And even with our interview with Mark Charles that we did last week, yeah. I mean, we're going there with Mark, but one of the first things we're actually trying to do is expose the failure of their own worldview to be able to get there.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of what we were trying to do with Matt Walsh, that we tried to do with Mark Charles last week.
Yeah, the other thing, you know, I mean, the other thing just in the back of my mind too, is I think one of the weaknesses, I wholeheartedly agree. The gospel is the power of salvation to all who believe. That's got to be that's the spear point. That's the power. And I think that Chuck was exactly right, that Matt was somewhat ashamed of that, and at least when we were talking to him. The one thing I also didn't want to leave behind, though, is I think Christians also need to recognize that the science and the history are on our side.
That's right.
And so even though I agree with you that natural law and natural revelation are not sufficient to save, they are our weapons.
They're
still
not neutral in the conversation.
They're not neutral in the conversation. And so I didn't want Matt also to get the impression that we were saying that none of his arguments are worth anything.
Right.
I want to equip Christians to recognize that science is on our side, history is on our side, natural revelation agrees with Jesus because he's the Lord over it.
Right. Except obviously he has the idea that those arguments can have a power in the heart of a natural person.
Right. And that's right. Where he's wrong.
Yeah, he thinks they're sufficient in and of themselves.
And he's wrong there, but I just want to hold that together.
But right. Doc, again, I keep going back to this, and I'll say this again. I know that Matt Walsh is the issue in the conversation, but to me, and you know this from being one of the guys who offers a social justice statement.
Right.
It's guys who are the closest to us that scare me. Watching what happened on the panel with John MacArthur and Phil Johnson and watching that whole thing, that scared me more than the situation that happens with Matt Walsh. Because these are guys that I think handed me ammo, the guys that I think that we're fighting with when it comes to this cultural Marxism and social justice.
They're supposed to be part of our starting
and
five.
Yet they're the first guys I think that would drop us in the same time.
That's true.
And so while I do see Matt as an issue, we have an in-house fight that's way more because what's being compromised here is the gospel in the same way that Matt would be compromising it too, right? Yeah. And you've talked about this on the show because I've listened. And so I have a little more concern about where we're at in camp, you know, in the reform world.
The gospel coalition.
Right.
Oh.
I couldn't jump in a foxhole with them.
I'm more worried there, even though on paper we actually agree on paper
more with
the Gospel Coalition and PCA.
I feel like I could trust Matt Walsh in some instances,
but I don't trust them when we're up against.
I ain't trusting nobody right now.
Well, there's no question that when we're not on the air, I can give you some more background information about what you were talking about.
That's the show, guys.
There are just certain things you don't talk about in public, shall we say, right now.
We didn't talk about everything.
We didn't
public.
Get that memo. Yeah. Nobody told us that.
Yeah. But no, I hear you, and I believe me, I every day I'm being attacked by folks and it's far more difficult for me to have to deal with attacks from people who I have to accept their Christian profession than it is all the Muslims or atheists in the world. I don't like putting Muslims and atheists together in that way, but you get the idea, non-Christians. Because you have to accept their profession of faith and deal with them as a brother at that point, whether they are or not, that's not up to us to judge. So I was going to ask one last thing, and then I want to, it sort of actually crosses over. But you said something about co-belligerents and allies and seeing Roman Catholics in a certain way. Would you see a conservative believing Muslim in the same way as a Roman Catholic?
No.
Tap, 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 tap. We still have the connection there, Rich?
Can you hear us?
I can hear you. It just got quiet.
No, Toby said no.
I said no.
Okay.
We would not see Roman Catholics and Muslims in the same way.
Okay. What about in dealing with transgenderism?
Are you asking if we would agree politically in one sense to do, to move forward with them on the issue? Or are you asking
in,
if we...
In the sense of co-belligerence, is there any way to look at a Muslim who likewise believes that there is a creator, that God created male and female, that transgenderism is a violation of the creator's will, they don't want their children exposed to this... in England, for example, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but in the United Kingdom, it has been, in a certain area anyways, Muslim parents that have taken the lead in objecting to transgender education in the public schools. So in that situation, could there be co-belligerence? Okay, so now I'm hearing a yes instead of... Okay.
In the same way, I could be a co-belligerent with an atheist fighting the pro-life issue, a pro-life atheist.
Yeah,
but I also know.
I don't know how they get there.
I also know where I'm going to maybe distrust them or not, or hedge my protect myself, you know, in that co-belligerent.
When you first asked the question about Roman Catholic and Muslim, I thought you just meant do I view them theologically?
Right. No.
No. But in terms of co-belligerence, with regard to pro-life or anti-statism or anti-trans mutilation, absolutely.
I think the difference too is that we know how long we can be co-belligerent since we have a historical track record that shows that Muslims are just waiting to cut our heads off and Catholics are just waiting to expel us and burn us. But they have a different trajectory in time, you know?
You are just so easy to keep, you know, so many people going the same direction with you, Chocolate, that it's great.
I just know where the cliff is. I know where the fall off is what I'm saying. You know, we have different fall off.
I just happen to know some Muslims that would go. I'm not interested in cutting your head off, and I never would be. So that's just why I mentioned that in passing.
So they're not Muslims then.
Oh, they would argue with you about that too.
But you
know where that went. That got priests up real quick.
So speaking of the PCA,
hey, wait a second.
Great segue.
Wait a second.
Speaking of the PCA, I think I heard some information recently that is there something going on?
Oh, you picked up on his dot.
I'm sorry. I think I saw some information recently that there are people in the PCA that want some examination to be done in regards to the church that Greg Johnson is the pastor of. We having breakup issues again?
A little bit, but I think we got most of that question. So he's part of that church, the Greg Johnson Memorial Presbyterian in St. Louis.
Right.
It's part of Missouri Presbytery.
Yep.
And Missouri Presbytery did a report that I think there were people within the presbytery and people out of the presbytery that asked them to do an investigation.
Yeah.
And so that report just came out last week.
Mm-hmm. And then Kevin DeYoung's presbytery, the Carolina Presbytery, did their own committee report on it, which came out this past week.
Okay.
And then I know there's a couple other presbyteries working on reports too.
What will these reports result in?
Yeah, I'm not in the PCA. So I grew up in the PCA. I'm not in the PCA anymore. And I don't have the inside word on what's going to happen at presbytery. I do know that some things I have heard a couple pastors talk about some things that they want to bring to presbytery about.
Do you mean General Assembly?
General Assembly. Yeah, excuse me. That they're going to bring to General Assembly about the Revoice situation, but I don't know any inside track on what they want to do, what they want to say, and if any motions are going to be made.
The Missouri Presbytery report, as I understand it, was fairly milquetoast.
Hmm. Well, they specifically, their elders in that report said they wanted to protect Greg
after the show. Yeah, after the show it came.
Greg's own elders.
Greg's own elders. Yes. So yeah. Specifically in the Missouri report, the elders said Greg's elders wanted to protect Greg after our show.
And I think the report, about us.
Yeah.
But I think the Missouri Presbytery report, which is tasked to investigate all this, came out basically sort of saying well, they could have been a little bit more careful here and there.
They need to clarify some issues.
But everybody else needs to be a lot nicer. And there's room to agree to disagree here.
Basically, they got in trouble, got a smack on the hand for not communicating well enough.
Right. And everybody else got a smack on the hand for not being nice enough.
That's right. That's a great way to summarize.
So there's going to be another Revoice conference at that same church, right?
I'm not sure if it's at the same church, but it's going to be in St. Louis again.
Definitely again.
Yeah. And if I recall correctly, when I responded on Twitter to something you all had said about that, it was, what's the guy's name?
Nate Collins.
Collins. What was the description that he had of your interview? It was
he hated our inquisition. He said it was not nice.
I didn't like it.
It was pretty bad.
If I remember correctly, he thought it was a lynch. It's kind of like a lynch mob, but that wasn't a show or interview. That was
an
inquisition, is what he called it. If I remember correctly, that was an inquisition to try and get Greg to come out. So.
Apparently it was
not dignifying his humanity when we asked him that question.
But that was Chocolate Knox's fault because he came straight out and said, "Are you gay?"
Yeah. And then he asked Knox on a date.
and he didn't answer. He didn't answer your question.
He responded by saying he had a porn addiction.
Right.
For 15 years, although he hasn't taken part in porn for the last 15 years. So I don't know what addiction means there, but.
Right. Yeah. I went back and listened to it to see, exactly what it was all about. And in fact, I think Chocolate Knox, I think you gave me an index to the video, the YouTube video, so I could just see exactly what it was. And so he didn't answer directly. Now he's come out and said he is a homosexual. Does the PCA, how can the PCA protect him in his position? Doesn't the PCA have a rule that says if you are a homosexual, you cannot be an elder in the congregation?
Well, this is the trick. This is the whole Revoice play.
Get ready for a magic trick.
Which is that basically they are trying to carve out room for a homosexual identity, which they claim they're not acting on.
Right.
So we can be, they're arguing that you can have this orientation, you can have these homosexual desires, homosexual lust, homosexual attraction, which I hate that word.
I did too.
But they want to carve out an identity where you can claim to be quote unquote gay and celibate.
So
their argument is the reason why they're saying they shouldn't have to be defrocked or required to step down from their pastorate is because they're saying, well, we're not actually acting on it. What the Bible actually forbids is sodomy. I'm not participating in actual sodomy, ergo I'm fine. I just struggle with sin like all other Christians.
And my sin is sodomy that I struggle with.
I'm tempted to sodomy.
Remember, he's using the language orientation.
Right.
And so they're specifically, James, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, just making sure. And so he's specifically trying to cast this in some sort of orientation that he can have without acting out.
I'm just broken. I'm just broken sinner like all the rest of you.
Right.
I just like little boy.
So the issue then is, there isn't an actual rule that currently exists in the PCA that would at least not allow his initial ordination?
Well, I think everything comes down to definition of homosexual. And so what their
orientation,
what they're trying to argue for though, is that all of the places that we would go to that say, well, you can't be a homosexual and be, you can't even be a homosexual, and a Christian, first Corinthians 6. These people will not inherit the kingdom of God. But they want to say, well, that means practicing.
Right.
Homosexual, as in practicing sodomy. And so Greg Johnson and his friends would say, but I'm not practicing that. I'm just, God made me, gave me, I have this orientation. It's part of the fall, or maybe there's some elements of it that are God given and good because, what queer treasure might be in the New Jerusalem.
Right. 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 Yeah. No, I'm well aware of what their arguments are. I just was not aware of exactly how far they advanced within the PCA, or whether the PCA is a big enough group that you have variations and shades of perspectives. And
I think there are.
Yeah, I'd assume so.
I think there is a pretty broad spectrum. I think there are some who are, I've heard from people personally who are very concerned about this, see this as significantly bad and wrong, and want to see decisive action. And then I think it's the full spectrum from that all the way to a squishy middle that says, you know, maybe we just need to be more careful with the words that we're using, but they probably mean well, all the way over to Greg Johnson himself and friends who are saying, no, we need to celebrate this. We need to protect this and, you know, make the PCA a safe place.
We've had Andrew Dion and what Matt, Michael Foster on the show. And those on the top end of the spectrum.
Well, they just left.
Well, they're gone.
Yeah. They left the PCA.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me, especially I think coming from a Baptist position and perspective, if you look at how Presbyterians, this is as a Baptist position, let me jump into that world for a second, how Presbyterians reason to understand infant baptism, making those connections there, you would think, as looking at it from a Baptist world inside a Presbyterian world, couldn't you guys make an easy connection about homosexuality in this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You'd think.
Yeah, you would think that this would be a really easy subject, but everybody's being so soft.
This is to our shame.
Well, the problem is we have too many PhDs in Presbyterian.
Ah.
No offense. No offense, Dr. White.
Oh, no. No, I fully understand exactly what you're saying. I understand that, and there is a desire on the part of many people to be accepted by the worldly wise, and this has become a dogma of our society. And if you do not only accept but celebrate and celebrate loudly, you are a cultural heretic. And that's why I keep saying, whether it's 2021 or 2025, in one of those 2 years, those who are already showing their fangs will have the political power to start biting. And we're going to find out very, very quickly how many of us are going to stand firm and disappear from social media and from almost any other way of ever being heard again. That's, you know, again, unless something changes, in listening to every single one of the Democratic candidates for presidency, I get the feeling that there's not a one of them that would defend religious liberty, freedom, speech rights over against a homosexual, transgender, pro-abortion, culture of death agenda. Not a one of them would.
Which is actually why I'm strangely hopeful, actually, because they're so, all of them are so absolutely horrible and wicked, showing their fangs. And I think it's some of that. It's, you know, New York passing this, you know, we're going to abort babies even maybe after they're born.
Yeah.
Illinois, Virginia. just rolling back a ban on partial birth abortion. I think them showing their true colors is waking a lot of people up. And meanwhile, on the flip side, you got all these heartbeat bills being passed.
He don't like those, though.
But we like them.
I didn't say that. I said that's not enough. You can't just stop there.
Well, you have to educate
the entire society as to the wholeness of human life from conception onwards.
Dr. White.
But
Dr.
You White. Guys got to go listen to our show that we have with Dr.
Hold
White.
So do you want to change that, Dr. White? Do you want to say that you would allow Arizona to pass a heartbeat?
Even though wait a minute. You know that the way you put the question was meant to exclude any type of nuanced middle. You know you put it that way.
No. You know the way you put the answer was allowed to exclude a nuanced middle.
No. You all were complaining about the fact that I would actually... there was some famous guy who was on a college campus a few years ago and was trying to reason with the airheaded communist zealots there in front of him. And one particular woman... who clearly could not allow you to say more than five words at a time, was just interrupting him constantly. And eventually, out of frustration, he said, you know, I do frequently have thoughts that require more than one sentence to express. and I thought that was a brilliant response, and you know who said it. So what was that? Oh, let me cut you off right there.
I hear what James. I hear what you're saying as far as 2021 and 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm with you in terms of I see the lay of the land, and at the same time I think, wow, isn't right. All these bills being passed, and I'm actually hopeful that maybe God will have mercy on us, and it will be better than we fear.
But, well, and I'd add one thing. I mean, you know the history of the PCA. They broke from the PCUS. right. back in 1973 over liberalism coming into the church. And there was a real courage there for what, something 300 PCA churches that did that, that eventually formed what was what we now know as the PCA. And we don't have that courage anymore in the PCA. You don't see pastors creating a stink like they should about the Revoice situation and saying, hey, this is liberalism coming into our church.
How do they think it happened?
And I would even say in the SBC circles, you're seeing some of the same things. Like, where's the backbone of pastors? Where's the spine? Where's the courage? You know, we say on our show a lot, courage begets courage. And just I think a little courage will go a long way in all this. And we're starting to see some of it.
It's inspiring to see someone else stand up and be bold with the truth of the gospel.
Amen.
I'm going to tell you somebody who's helped with that, though. And Doc, this goes back to something you were talking about on our show when we had interviewed you. You said it's not about what we do in 2020. It's what we do in 2025, right? After that, who's next? But Trump has emboldened a lot of people on the conservative side and on the Christian side to be bold in a way that has been shocking and that we haven't seen. And because of that,
doesn't God have a sense of humor?
It's amazing.
Isn't it hilarious?
It's amazing. And because of that, Christians need to be running all the plays, need to be Super Bowl. Christian businesses need to get in. Look, the market's going to be the best. It's probably ever going to be for a long time. If Trump is elected again, we got about another 5 years. Let's just mark it out. I agree with you, Doc. 5 years. Mm. Everything's going to change after that, right?
Yeah,
we should run everything. Start the businesses. Start the investment. Money is going to fly off. Christians have an opportunity now to be richer than they've ever been probably in American history in the last 40 years, okay?
Yeah.
We should be doing that because whatever comes next, we're going to need that kind of foundation, that kind of rootedness to be able to battle whatever happens after Trump.
Well, I just have to throw something out here, though. At this very point where you're saying that, and that sounds wonderful, but we are so divided, not just over issues like Revoice, but
that's right.
Now you've got the social justice movement that is absolutely paralyzing entire denominations.
Right.
At the very same time,
I don't think the church really likes the answer to this. It's how we disciple our kids, right? It's an 18-year problem that we have. We actually started discipling. One of the reasons why we have the social justice problems, Revoice problems, all that.
I didn't catch that last thing. The reason we have social justice problems is what? Oh, we're breaking up again. It'll come back slowly. Okay. I'm hearing every other word. 5, 4, 3.
Right now.
There we go. 2, 1.
All right.
All right. So you got an 18-year problem, and then you said something about after that, and I lost it.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why we have a social justice problem and a Revoice problem is because the church has failed to disciple a generation to think biblically about these issues and to be able to see prophetically the problems that these are bringing into church. And we've been, we just haven't discipled our kids well. We've been giving over to the public school systems for decades. And it's no wonder we have kids, you know, going out into the streets shooting each other. Well, there's a father problem 18 years ago that caused that whole problem in the first place. And the church is centrally responsible for that issue.
Lig Duncan actually spoke to this on the panel.
That's right.
Where he said the reason why he wanted to sort of lean in was because he was afraid of losing the young people.
Right. His kids, particularly.
And the reason why he's afraid to lose the young people is because he's not trained them. I mean, I respect the man, and I'm sure he's done great good for the kingdom, but this is the kind of thing that needed to be taught to your kids when they were little.
Yeah, and starting with baptizing.
And it's not. Can I just say it's not hard? I grew up in a charismatic church with a single mom, and if there was one thing that was drilled into me from my mom, it's the Bible or nothing. And I don't care how stupid you look. Okay, it's the Bible or nothing. If it ain't in the Bible, forget it, son. But it was that kind of teaching that got me to a Reformed doctrine.
Yeah,
it's that kind of teaching that made me give up secularist worldviews and atheist. Even if I would have went to college, there wasn't nothing they could do after being brought up with my mom in that culture that would have ever changed. It's the Bible or nothing. Right. I don't care if I don't graduate. It's the Bible or nothing. And right now, because we're not getting that type of education, like Gabe was saying, from K on, it's actually other stuff. And then when you go home, you can get the Bible.
Right.
Jesus is the center of that. Right. And so,
yeah. And no one likes this answer. Because it's not sexy to have to sacrifice your life for your kids for 18 years and disciple them well, or for life, not even just 18 years.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Table Talk article where the point was made that everyone wants to go kill dragons, but no one wants to change diapers. Like, no one sees glory in discipling right. their own children for 18, 20 years. And that's the answer. Imagine, I mean, we just got a math problem ahead of us. That's all we have. If we're faithful and little, raising our children to be Christians, they're killing off their kids. They're having abortions. They're the ones that, in our town, all the liberals' kids grow up and they leave town to go to college. You know, it's the family, the liberal family is disintegrating. If they have kids.
They're 1.3 kids.
Oh, yeah. I like to believe that the reproduction rate...
Let's just turn this into a problem for the next generation.
Yeah, I'd like to think that that's going to catch up in time. But as I'm watching various states giving away their voting sovereignty to undercut the Electoral College. Which sure. is so... the most obvious attempt to deconstitutionalize this republic I've ever seen, and yet it's happening yeah. right in front of our eyes.
French Revolution.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. And, yeah, you know, us in the big cities will be in more trouble than those of you hiding out in Idaho someplace, who are that's undoubtedly right. probably very well armed,
we're
too.
We're sharpening our knives and getting our arrows ready to fire. And that's what I guess what I add to that is that I know you're seeing that, and we're seeing that too.
Yeah, we see it.
But there's something else that hasn't been seen. What's really been interesting in the pro-life movement right now, the last 30 years, God has kind of done something amazing. And 30, 40 years even,
yeah.
the pro-life movement has been perfecting and engaging and sharpening its weapons and its logic and its rhetoric to the point now that the liberals don't have any new arguments.
They don't.
And so they're losing. And what we didn't see, and it looks like that we're losing, but we're for the first time in a long time, we're actually fighting and winning. And what's happening on the underground is there is a group of people God set aside. There's his 10,000 he set aside. When you go hide in the cave, I'm a little worried. There's 10,000 set aside ain't bowed the knee to Baal. You know what I'm saying? And so what's going on? There's an educational group of classical Christian schools that are out there that are being raised up, and we haven't even seen yet what God's going to do with them. Yeah. And so I don't think we're that far off. We're still graduating. We got NSA out here, Christian colleges that are graduating, next generation of leaders. We haven't even put them into the conversation of what's at play yet. So, yeah, I think you're right in observing one side of the conversation, but there's a whole nother side. You got a left-handed Ehud. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why
churches got to get a vision of what Christian education looked like for their kids, K through 20, 4 years old, whatever it is. And they got to start building pubs, opening up coffee stores, baptizing their babies.
Divided lines.
You know, all the way through. We don't have a vision. The church nationwide, of course, I'm generalizing here, does not have a vision of what it means to educate their kids in the knowledge and fear of the Lord through their life. We don't. We don't have that. We got to get it. We're recovering it. Like Knox said, there's examples that are being pointed out where that's the case. But generally speaking, I mean, 80% of Christian kids are in the public school system. 80%.
You do know this is Dr. White's show, right?
Okay.
I'm just sitting around listening in. It's okay. You know, don't have to worry about me. Once you all start preaching, it's just sort of like, I'm just going to check my phone here for a while. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. Look.
Get a nice little drink here, and we're good. Yeah. All right. So, well, hey, guys, believe it or not.
Really,
80% of our kids, of our Christian kids, are going to the public school system. And
what'd you say, Doc?
Go ahead.
And no, it's breaking up on us, and we're right to get toward the top of the hour, and you've been more than kind to be with me all this time. And have you noticed something? There's one thing, last observation I'll make here, is that when you have to talk the whole time without Chocolate Knox's musical interludes, it makes for a much longer program.
Oh man,
we did that on purpose.
That's when you take a drink, is when the music's playing, right? Okay, all right.
You found out our drinking game.
Can I just say real quick, Mama, I made it on Divided Line. All right.
Well, the next time, Chocolate Knox, the next time you come down to Phoenix, you got to let us know early enough so we can get a chair sitting right there. We can bring you in
and real time.
We can put a little keyboard in front of you if you want to do some riffs type thing. You know, dee 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 dee, whatever. whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
hey,
right.
Guys, thanks for coming on the program today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope everybody else enjoyed the conversation. And so y'all look up Cross Politic if you haven't already been listening, even though I've been told I'm not supposed to be listening to it, yet I do anyways. Pray for all of us as we try to do what's right in the eyes of the Lord and would be honoring and glorifying to his kingdom. Thanks for joining with us, guys.
Thanks, Dr. White.
All right, James. God bless you guys. We'll see you. And thank you for watching Dividing Line. We'll see you next time. God bless.